We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome in, everybody, to the latest edition of the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns, here with host Andrew Spade. We are going to do an exercise, which, I mean, I'm excited to do this because it gives us a chance to look at the conference as a whole. We're going to rank our power rankings pre-draft. Obviously, we will do this again maybe mid-May, looking at the post-draft power rankings. But I think it's a good time to reflect on off-season player acquisitions for all of these teams, look at what the outlook, I think, will certainly be shaped some still, but we have a pretty good feeling for who these teams are going to be. So we're going to rank from 16 to first, the AFC, and our first edition of the Power Rankings. I'm pumped to do this, Andrew. What's up, man?
Harder than I thought it was going to be. When you suggested this, I was like, well, it feels like there's some pretty clear teams, and there are actually, like, the first three spots I filled out were 16, 2, and 1.
Yeah, top and bottom, always very easy.
Yeah, that felt pretty easy. And I, maybe that's always how it goes. Sometimes I struggle with teams at the top, you know, a little bit more. But with this one, it really is, and I don't even want to say it's like the middle class. There's like an upper middle class.
Right.
And then there's like a lower middle class.
Right.
And it really extends from, in my mind, 15 to, I think, 3. That's what I'm going to call the middle class.
I think that's probably the best way to put it. And like you said, 16, 15, 14 were easy for me, and then 1 and 2. After that, figuring out who I think is third, a little tricky. And then figuring out that, yeah, that 8 to 12-ish range is I can see this angle, that angle, the other. But I think there's a lot to talk about here, so I don't think we should waste any time. I mean, the Browns did make one move today, which we should note if you're paying attention to this. We have talked about the evolving situation around continual special teams, what they look like with the new kickoff rule and how the Browns continue to get better in that department. It seems like Bubba Ventrone got another guy here in Justin Hardy, who is a Glenville guy, big Cleveland guy. Great video out there of him talking to Joe Flacco. I reposted today talking to Flacco after the Jets game, go win a championship for my city. Like, he's a very Cleveland guy from everyone who knows him. Obviously one of the staple high school football programs in Northeast Ohio with the Tar Blooders there. So excited to see what Justin Hardy can do. And he is a really exceptional special teams player. We talked about this a little bit and maybe trying to find cornerback depth in one of these guys. I think between the two options that they've selected here, between Justin Hardy and I think it's Tony Brown, right? Those two selections they've made here, I don't get a bunch of confidence around those guys solving any corner depth issues, but I also think there's a chance that they still are drafting one of those guys. So I'm encouraged. I like them strengthening specials, and I think Hardy's a good selection, and I like the Cleveland connection too.
It'll be interesting to me how they parse this, because this is another signing that on its face does not really fit in terms of the roster composition. So there was some conversation today about, do they keep six cornerbacks now, and are they light somewhere else, maybe a linebacker? How do they adjust that? Is this due to the kickoff rule change and thinking they need one more guy to effectively defend that, probably more than you know, how they're going to run the return piece? They're probably thinking more about keeping guys inside on return lanes, that sort of thing. So Very interested, but it is always fun. I mean, I think anytime you see a player with that type of passion for the city, that's such a rare thing in today's NFL. It doesn't really exist for the most part. And so when it does come around, it always gets people's attention. So obviously, from the jump, this guy's going to be a fan favorite.
Yeah, no doubt. And how much they give him, how much, I mean, he's coveted. The Jets coveted him, and he was a really good player. I remember going up to that game, and there was like 40 Hardy jerseys in the stands. His whole family showed out for that game, which is really cool to see. But like, yeah, I mean, it's on the surface a very limited player, but it's quite clear the Browns feel like they don't have enough of those. So he's not really a corner in the league. He's never played a ton of snaps there. And you and I have spoke a little bit about the roster doesn't have a ton of wiggle room for these sorts of things. So you say, okay, maybe now that you don't have to keep a quarterback on the 53, does that open up a spot directly? To be determined. I feel pretty confident though that he's going to be around. I think they're really valuing some of these guys in a changing environment around special teams. So we will see. I like the signing. Hopefully it works out.
Yeah, I think roster construction this year will change. So
right.
If you're pegging what they do, you know, what they normally do to the last few years, I think there will be a shift at a few positions. It's not going to be drastic. They're not going to like carry 9 cornerbacks or something, but there might go an extra, there might be 2 or 3 positions where they change numbers, even go +2, you know, because it's just a new world.
We'll keep you apprised of all that stuff. We'll see what they do in the draft, if that tells us anything. But the roster, like Andrew said there, is evolving. And in a year where it could be, I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from this year. We'll see. Let's get into this, though. We have 16 teams to talk about and rank. I'm curious if we both have the same 16th overall team. Who do you have, Andrew?
The New England Patriots, the dynasty that currently has a documentary out about it, right? As being like the team.
Something.
And they are the worst team in the conference. I don't think it's really that close to being debatable.
No, and they've lost the magic, the Belichick magic that you could like lean on and say, well, they're not going to be that bad because they have Bill. I mean, I like Jerod Mayo. I think he seems like a really strong personality and from everything you hear, a great guy. The roster stinks, man. It's not very good. It lacks star power. It lacks weapons. Now, they could change some of this in the draft, and it seems likely to me, even though they did bring back Jacoby Brissett on a 1-year deal. We like that. We wish Jacoby luck. We wish Sione Takitaki luck over there. That they, I guess where I'm at, Andrew, they're going to draft a quarterback, and then they're going to find a direction probably here. But this roster,
but they're so bad.
I mean, maybe, if somebody really wants to trade up, I would be considering like stockpiling picks, rolling picks into the future. They're in a full rebuild scenario here. I can't even give you the best. I mean, they kept Kyle Duggar around. They signed Antonio Gibson. Like I said, Takitaki. I mean, like the names that they've even brought in are very fringe 53s. So like Patriots in a bad spot. I don't think, like, for the first time in a long time, like, truly their talent is going to be worse than the opponents are going with. So I don't expect them to be very good. And again, they could have a good draft, can make some great decisions. But as we sit here, hard to see them as a team I pick over anybody right now.
Well, and you mentioned the Belichick magic being gone in terms of the coaching side, not having that floor defensively. I think the real story, I agree with that. And I would say in addition to that, he mismanaged the personnel side of that roster after Tom Brady so badly. And I there was a really good article after the season about the discord between the Krafts and Belichick and where the blame falls. I think they're all responsible. It has been...
Unless it's the documentary, it's all Bill's fault.
That's the thing. Right. They're pushing in that one, right? Yeah, that's the Krafts pushing. That's his Hall of Fame swan song, right? But I think that is not talked about enough in terms of, I think probably the main reason that the Falcons didn't end up hiring Bill Belichick in my mind is you look at what he's done over the past few years once Tom Brady left, and it's like, this guy doesn't know how to build a team in today's NFL. It's as simple as that. So this isn't just about like him not being there and a 1-year rebuild. This has been coming for a while.
Couldn't agree more. I think the Patriots, as we know them, are completely done. Now, could they pull off some miracles? Maybe, but they're going to be a bottom team in this conference for the foreseeable future. they'd be wise. I know that it's tempting to take a Drake May and go that route, or Jane Daniels, whatever. I just think it'd be really wise to stockpile picks and move back five and take a swing on a different quarterback and see what you can do to just supplement this roster. Because the current state of things there is a death sentence, I feel like, for a rookie quarterback. So
especially like a developmental player like Daniels, it would just be a very poor match, I think.
Agreed. All right, 15. We could be different on this one. Who do you have at 15?
I've got the Raiders.
Man, we are way different. Okay, give me your reasoning.
Right. Well, my reasoning is essentially the quarterback position.
Got it.
So
probably that's a good.
I'm not a believer in O'Connell. I think he's a fine backup, probably. That, you know, that's cool, and that'll work out. But it's him and Gardner Minshew, and I don't really see, based on the hires they made on offense, I don't see the vision, I guess is what I would say.
Right.
I think Antonio Pierce, I understand why he got that job. We've seen plenty of examples of this not working out, where a coach that gets the locker room behind them, finishes the year strong, right, then gets the full-time gig, hires a bunch of people that are mostly his friends, is what it seemed to be his main hiring criteria was. That doesn't usually bode well going into the next year in terms of sustaining success. So I think the defense will probably be decent, but I think this has a chance to be. I think I see the Raiders and Patriots offenses as almost neck and neck for ineptitude. I mean, it's Davante Adams and nobody.
Yeah, especially, I mean, Josh Jacobs. Yeah, yeah, Josh Jacobs is gone. They've let go of Hunter Renfrow. You know, they have Michael Mayer, maybe second-year tight end jump. They did bring in Harrison Bryant. We wish him luck with the Raiders. But, yeah, I mean, they did bring in Gardner Minshew, 2 years, $25 million. I mean, yeah, it's a fair one. I probably have them too high.
Gets fired, ends up there. I just don't. What's the path to them having like a top half of the league offense? I don't see it. I just don't see it. So,
yeah, this 13 to 16 range is probably interchangeable. So,
yeah,
I put the Titans at 15. I don't really believe in the direction that they're going. I think they signed some names that on paper look good, but like, I mean, Chido Awuzie is past his prime. I mean, Calvin Ridley. It feels like an overpaid wide receiver decision to me. They didn't really get that much better along the offensive line for me. And then that's been a collective issue. And then, I mean, like Tony Pollard, I don't really like that fit there. So I think I have the Titans. Now, obviously Will Levis gets better, better, better. That changes the scope here, but I don't really like the direction. The secondary's rough, although they did obviously make a huge trade, right? Here recently that maybe some people didn't expect. Maybe I'm too low on the Titans, but I just don't have a bunch of belief in the route they went and some of the names they brought in. They're so bad at linebacker, and their safety group is pretty rough too. So I just think the Titans, and I'm leaning against Will Levis really developing into anything other than kind of just an average quarterback, which that's fine because some people didn't think he would even be that. But I'm going to have the Titans at 15. But I don't feel like super confident in it because I feel like these 15, 14, 13s are interchangeable. Like I have Denver at 14, largely again driven by like, where the hell are they going? What are they doing?
That's where I have them as well.
Okay, so we maybe flip-flop. Who do you have at 13?
Tennessee. So yeah,
okay, so we flip-flop the Raiders and Titans.
These are the three teams in this tier. The case I would make for the Titans is sometimes in the NFL you can just add enough talent to be better, even if it's not sustainable or, you know, like going to get you anywhere. But I think the Titans could end up being like a 7-win team. I mean, Legarius Sneed, I know Calvin Ridley's not like a star, but Hopkins, Ridley, and Burks is an okay 1-3.
You need Burks to take a step, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got Phillips's depth there. Maybe Phillips passes Burks, whatever. You know, I think they probably go tackle in the draft. I know we're talking pre-draft, but Cushenberry is a really good center. It feels to me like they kind of did what you would do in the first year of a Madden rebuild.
Yep.
Where they just were like, throw a bunch of cash at guys. We don't want to be terrible. And I look from an AFC North pod perspective, what if Brian Callahan was really the guy with the juice in Cincinnati?
It's a way you can spin it. I think it's
and I really like his coaching staff. I like Denard Wilson. He interviewed with the Browns last year. I like Nick Holtz as an offensive coordinator. I think they're young guys. They're not retreads.
Right.
And then he got his dad in there to kind of help guide things, which was very instrumental in Stefanski being good first year. So I think I'm not going like you know, Titans wild card here, but I think you could make a case that they could be getting some things together if Levis takes the step you were talking about.
Right. So you got to have a lot of belief in Levis, which again, he had moments, he had real moments and they seem to like him. I think I'm higher on the Raiders defense as a collective unit, especially their defensive line, to really cause some havoc.
Yeah. They're going to be a nightmare.
They're going to be a nightmare, but I also can understand where you're coming from with the Titans, but that's the tier, the Denver.
Agreed. Yeah. And I don't even want to talk about the Broncos.
No, we don't have to. They didn't even, I mean, they have no quarterback direction.
Right. And they've been treading water.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. I really don't have a feel for it. And like, I can't even really comment on any of their big decisions. Like, they let Justin Simmons go.
Right.
They're probably just keeping like a straw above the water to breathe while they get rid of the Russell Wilson nightmare cap scenario. And I don't want to make fun of that because I don't feel comfortable making fun of that yet. So we leave Russell Wilson contract comments.
Ghost of Christmas future, perhaps?
We don't make that joke because then we'll have to, not saying it will, but we, don't want to poke fun at something, a trap that we could step into. So,
biggest addition for them in free agency, sorry to cut you off, is probably what, Josh Reynolds? Maybe Cody Barton? It's those are the two names.
Cody Barton, it didn't get better. They really didn't.
The phones were off.
I mean, they have a lot of holes to fill. They let go of Jerry Jeudy. So, like, I know you have Marvin Mims ready to play more, but, like, they didn't gain much talent at all. So, I mean, you can make a case for Denver being the 16th spot here. I probably need to rethinking this, put the Titans in front of Denver. I'm doing that on the fly there. This is what we're doing on the fly. But, yeah, those are the three in the tier. Now, the next tier of, like, 12 to 10 is pretty interesting to me. I have the Jags at 12. I don't know. Who do you have there?
Yeah, I see. I agree. 12 to 10 is pretty much the same. I have the Chargers at 12.
All right. So I have the, we'll talk about it. I have the Jags at 12 because I don't really know what they're doing.
And I have them at 11. So
they're supposed to be like building around this still rookie contract quarterback. And I guess you could say, I don't believe it. Gabe Davis is a swap out for Calvin Ridley. He is fine in your universe, but like, I don't believe that. They did add some talent in like Eric Armstead, but you know, they lost some secondary talent, Darius Williams, Rayshon Jenkins. They've lost, some pieces that matter to them winning football games. I just don't have a ton of confidence. I don't know why. Perhaps I'm too low on the Jags, but these teams now from 12 to 1, these teams could make the playoffs, I think, if the things break the right direction. I didn't like the Jags' general vibe at the end of last year, how they were playing for Doug Peterson and like their belief in the schemes and the system being used. Does that change now? I don't know. I don't have a ton of faith that it will. And I think I trust two teams in front of them, but I'm curious who you have at 12. You said Chargers.
Yeah, I've got the Chargers, but I've got the Jags at 11, so I'll just kind of give my two cents on them. Agreed with you on the wide receiver thing. I think they got worse on offense overall. That's kind of my feel for it. Continue to have questions about their offensive line. They continue to not be able to fix that. Maybe they find something in the draft, but I don't know. And then I think the biggest change on defense is probably, like you said, Armstead, a few secondary players, but the biggest change is the coordinator going from Mike Caldwell to Ryan Nielsen. I think that's an upgrade. So if the defense could be good, like good, like a top 12 unit, and then the offense did what they did last year, it's probably a wild card team, right? But I'm with you. I don't really trust Doug Peterson to keep this thing on the rails. And there's the element here with Trent Baalke where he and Peterson are not pulling in the same direction. They're fighting each other very clearly. And so the question becomes, if there's some sort of power struggle outcome, does one of them get fired like midseason or preseason or, because it feels like it's kind of all on the table for them because they have underachieved so much recently.
Well, you also, this Doug Peterson thing, it feels like he arrives, he gets something out of teams that were missing some clear professionalism, just general understanding of how to coach a ball club, put their offensive players in the right spot. And then it just fades.
Yep.
The messaging loses steam, like the belief in him fades or he rides guys too hard. I don't know what it is, But the Jags are a wide variance. They could be a 6-7 win team that fires Peterson, or they could win double digit games and be in the mix in that division somehow, right? It's a wild, they're a wild team. I just don't have something about them at the end of the year. I did not enjoy their leadership.
As big of a collapse as you can have down the stretch. I don't think that has been talked about enough, how much they had an almost insurmountable lead and managed not to make even the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, bad taste. Maybe that changes as we get closer and really dig deeper at the start of the year. I have the Colts 11. Actually, let's slow down. We have a big difference here. So you have the Chargers at 12. I have the Chargers at 8. And I think I'm making a really big leap there because I believe in Jim Harbaugh. I just think he's going to figure out how to get the most out of these guys. Even though the roster has quite obviously changed significantly, they did keep some of the core parts of the defense around. And I'm cheating a little, Andrew, because they're clearly going to draft a meaningful wide receiver. And you and I both really believe, we're not rocket scientists here. We believe in this wide receiver class. And that seems to be the thing that they have let go of, right? And passing on and trading off Mike Williams and then trading off Keenan Allen. But, you know, I like Gus Edwards and what he likes to do. Will Disley, good blocking tight end. I feel like they are going to be a little bit better in the collective the buy-in portion of this, where Staley was so bad the last few years that you could quite easily tell. And the defensive coordinator that comes with Jim is obviously quite talented as well. Right. So you're talking about, in my opinion, Andrew, one of the more massive coaching upgrades that you will find. A guy who knows how to really run the football in Jim, a back he trusts. They'll probably scoop up another. And then you have a really gifted quarterback that he can do some things with. I just think that I trust Jim and the Chargers and Herbert to be a top 8 team in the AFC. But this is one that could blow up and they're just not ready and they're rewriting the defense in a year. What do you have them at 12 for?
Well, I mean, a few things, but this is just for fun. Are you looking at our lads right now?
I have not pulled up our lads.
Okay, good. Don't. Because just guess how many wide receivers the Chargers currently have on the roster. Like, total
maybe,
number.
Like, they have Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnston. Uh-huh. They have, like, two. And then, you know, I think maybe another one. Darius Davis, maybe
that's
is who
you,
it is.
That's a great pull. So that's their three starters. Behind that, they have one wide receiver.
Right.
Like, they have four on the roster.
For the sake of me telling everybody before this started, we're doing this pre-draft, I'm definitely cheating. Because that's as bad a depth chart. I mean, Josh Palmer's fun.
Well, you couldn't even run a practice with four wide receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in the building, right? Because they're a new coaching staff. So they're in Los Angeles right now. They're not practicing, but they're there. And the wide receiver room, there's like empty tables. There's, you know, they've got a Coke machine stored in the back because there's so much room.
Yeah,
like maybe, four wide receivers on the roster?
Pretty bizarre that...
That combined with Greg Roman being the offensive coordinator tells you a story to me. Like, I agree with you. They're going to run the shit out of the ball. And does that, with an offense that was entirely carried by Justin Herbert last year, how does that look? If you are a run-first team in this version of the NFL, this isn't college, this, you know... And this
without the threat of a quarterback running is another element.
Right. Because they shouldn't. They certainly shouldn't do that. What does that look like? And I don't think you can count. I agree with you. They draft a receiver at 5. I don't think you can count on any of the wide receivers in the building currently. So now you're putting everything on Malik Nabers to be out of the gate, like a go-to 150 target guy.
Yeah, so that's probably it.
I just don't see what the recipe is on offense to take advantage of the skill set of the quarterback. Unless it's just they think their running game is going to be so strong that they can survive on that and then play action shots because he could throw the hell out of the ball. We know that, but I don't see the construction, I guess is what I'm saying. So
the concern is definitely fair.
Yeah. And then I think even though the names on defense are good, I don't like there's a lot of guys there that I just don't trust to play a full season or to play up to their price tag. I think to me, bringing back Mack and Bosa at the expense of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams has got it totally backwards. But I agree with what you said about what Harbaugh has done. I think at some point, it's kind of like the Belichick conversation. At some point, this stuff stops working for these guys.
Right.
I'm wondering if maybe this is the stop for Jim, where the magic has kind of rubbed off a little bit, because that 49ers thing was 12 years ago.
It's clear to me that he only took this job and thought he could work it out with a process, right? Because he's deciding personnel, et cetera, because of Justin Herbert. Like, he's not going there searching out a quarterback. He loves J.J. McCarthy. We all get it. But, like,
right,
the Herbert thing is the big connection. So is the thought process, hey, we can run this thing like hell. We can maybe not be the most innovative passing team in the world, but we can rely on Justin to make 1, 2, 3 reads. I mean, I have to think that's what they're going to be. They're probably, because Jim is an offensive mind himself, is where John with Greg Roman wasn't, that they can come up with some answers in the passing game and then lean into being a really creative RPO right. based.
Let
if you're not going to run the quarterback,
let Greg handle it. Yeah.
We'll see, man. I mean, yeah. We talked about this with Baltimore. You just presume, like, you know, I think Greg Roman is a scary label because of, you know, we thought Todd Monken did a pretty good job and we were nervous that Monken could get it right, but he did. But you do forget how well that they can come up with run answers. So we'll see. You're right about this with Bosa and Khalil Mack. They're going to lean into the defense the first year and try to play off of that. But is that the answer? We'll see, man.
With a bunch of 30-plus old guys. And then to the point about the running game, like, sure, Gus Edwards. But, I don't love their running backs either. So I think the offense could be – I do think probably odds are that eventually Jim gets it right, but are they, like, out of the gates a playoff contender? I think it might take one more year.
Yeah, a lot of what I'm doing with the Chargers is projecting a belief in Justin Herbert, and maybe I'm just off. Like, maybe I'm a year or two too late on that. We'll see. It's the NFL has not done him any favors with who they've paired him with at times. So, 11, I have the Colts. So I'll tell you who I have. I have the Colts at 11, and then the Jets at 10 to cap that tier. I don't know where you. Who do you have at 11 and 10?
So I've got the Chargers at 12, Jaguars at 11. We already talked about them. And then I've got the Colts at 10.
Okay. So Colts, obviously everything's on Anthony Richardson. If he becomes the guy that he flashed last year, like, look out, because he can really be a dual threat, you know, as one of the more dangerous weapons. But he's got to protect himself. We talk about that with Watson all the time. He's got to stop. I mean, he had a concussion and a serious shoulder injury in his rookie year, and he's a huge guy. So huge guys don't always equate to being able to take those hits and survive. But, I mean, the offense is still really talented with one of the best play callers in the league. Steichen, Jonathan Taylor, feeling good about himself. A pretty good offensive line still. Bernard Raymond made some real steps for them. Josh Downs, nice rookie year. Michael Pittman, it's a good offense. If Richardson is able to maintain health and continue to get better. And the defense, they just brought a lot back. They really didn't make many moves.
Yeah, that's all they did is just return the team.
They really have to draft a corner. Pretty sure they're going to, because they are just defunct of talent in that role outside of Kenny Moore. Juju Brent's a second-round pick last year, had some moments, but not good enough. They did just bring back Julian Blackmon. I like this roster. I just have a hard time trusting Anthony Richardson quite yet. And it's not just, is he good? Like, I mean, from a dynasty fantasy perspective, you and I have talked about this a lot, like, chase him. He's fun. His ceiling is really high. But, the thing for Anthony Richardson, you would agree with me, is reps. He needs to play. And, when you have those two really gruesome injuries he had his first year, man, like, it's just hard to just say, yeah, believe in it, it's going to work out. Whereas I think we still need to see it from him. So I don't feel great about having them at 11. I think they could easily flip-flop to 10 or 9, but I like the Colts enough to have them at 11. So the Jets are probably where we maybe – I'm actually surprised I have the Jets higher than – or lower than you do. I got them at 10. Where do you have the Jets?
I have them at 8.
Okay. So the question will just be who we have at 9, which we'll get to in a minute. The Jets, yeah.
I just want to say one thing about the Colts quick.
Yeah,
do which it is up. Just that when you look at their roster top to bottom, it's just a wild card roster. There's nothing – and it's exactly to your point about Richardson. If Richardson is a dude, then they can compete for the division. They can really go places because he'll elevate the talent around them. But if he's struggles or if he's up and down, there's not, I mean, you look across the rest of that roster and it's just like, it is the definition of like a 9-8 football team. Not bad. Not bad. There's nothing that you really could criticize, but there's also nothing that you're just like, wow, look at that.
Right.
No pass rush or coverage ability in this NFL is very strange.
Yeah, they need guys like Quiddy Pay. Some of these guys they've invested in to be better, and they kept Buckner, and
yeah,
I think they brought back Grover Stewart. But they need to rush the passer better. They need to draft a corner and probably take a swing on an edge in the second round. Right. But the second round is dicey for edge guys. So I don't know. Right. I don't know what route they go there, but they definitely need that.
Like a souped up version of what the Browns do with Andrew Berry, where they love their own guys so much. They're so sure on their own guys that they don't want to block any of them. So now you're going to give a bunch of reps to guys that maybe don't deserve them. So it's really interesting that they're just all in on their ability to identify and draft players. But this is the whole Chris Ballard experience. He knows best, and he'll tell you that.
It's amazing they didn't pull off the Snead trade. Just an unbelievable whiff to get better and really open up their options.
For that price tag, especially.
Especially. All right, I have the Jets at 10. I like the Jets. If Aaron Rodgers is healthy, it's the caveat of all caveats. Like, he's got to be healthy. I don't think that he's going to experience another Achilles rupture that quick. But he's also 41, man. So I can't have him higher than that, because how much can I trust? Aaron Rodgers wasn't even that good. He was good, but he wasn't Aaron Rodgers in his last year in Green Bay. Then he has this gruesome foot injury. I mean, they've improved, Andrew. They got Mike Williams and Tyron Smith and John Simpson and Morgan Moses is like a part of things now. Like, they're better, right? You know, Breece Hall's gotten better and better, made some nice additions, including Hassan Reddick on the defense, and they're already talented enough there to be good. I just think that, again, the variables of, like, I just have a hard time believing that Robert Saleh is going to get this right and they're going to do this. Like, I there's something about the decisions they have made, and we've talked about this, and why having your GM feel like he's going to be here for the next 5 years is such an advantage. There's so much all in with their chips. Like, it's hard to see this working out. They could be a wild card team, but that's the capital, like, of where they go. So I don't know. I don't have a great vibe on ultimately where the Jets end up here, but I have them at 10, and it's driven by just like, where are they in terms of like the Saleh experience and Nathaniel Hackett, another year there. I don't know. I can't put them higher than 10. I just can't.
I hear you. I hear you. I think the main thing that I'm going with is you expect the defense to still be pretty good, just given the amount of talent and they added pieces that, you know, the Hassan Reddick trade you just mentioned. If you expect the defense to be good, like, again, a top 10 unit with top three upside, then Aaron Rodgers doesn't have to be peak Green Bay MVP or Aaron Rodgers. He just has to be competent. Their quarterback play was what sunk them last year. They were hanging around at the edge of wildcard contention until December because they were playing really, really good defense, and they won a few games they weren't supposed to. So the main thing was the quarterback play. And then the secondary thing to that was the offensive line. They did a really, considering that we haven't even seen the draft yet, I think adding the pieces that they did, if they could add another tackle in the draft that they think can play this year, you have to like the fact that they have four options then at tackle. And I think their interior is actually quite good. Simpson, Tippmann, and Vera Tucker. I think that's a pretty good interior offensive line.
I feel like I keep telling myself the Jets should be good, and it could be as simple as like, hey man, if Aaron Rodgers can just be decent at 41.
No, I agree. I think that's a lot of it. I also think it's worth mentioning, I know this is stupid, but like, Tyrod Taylor is a plus backup, something they also did not have last year. So even in the situation where Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, a Tyrod Taylor Jets team with the defense that they have, if it continues to play as well as it has, is around the wild card conversation. And I, if you know, I really see it as like 8 through 12 is all one tier. So the Jets, I've got the Dolphins, I've got the Colts, I've got the Jaguars and the Chargers. I see that as sort of a group. And so I could see them at the top end of that group or the bottom end.
Okay, good stuff. Let's take a break. Come back from break. We're going to talk through our top half of the AFC. And then, you know, I think there's some easy ones here and some that'll be a little tricky. So we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We at the OBR are proud to once again be sponsored by Game Time Ticket Application. It is one of the best on the market where buying tickets to your favorite events shouldn't feel stressful, and they don't feel stressful. It's a quick and easy process to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, anything you want for any event near you. Game Time has you covered. They have killer deals all throughout the process, including last-minute tickets with the best price guarantee. You can stop stressing over the availability and price of those tickets and just start looking forward to your event. I know that's how it was for us. My wife really wanted some Justin Timberlake concerts for her birthday. I went to Game Time. Easy process. Lets you look at the seating map, figure out where you can sit, have the view from the seats. They showed some flash deals that were available to get the best price, and that price was guaranteed even for event cancellation, job loss protection, all the above. Great seats for the concert. Made me a hero in the household. I'm telling you guys, Game Time is the place for the last minute ticket deals, or even if you're planning way out in advance, they have deals going on all the time. Like I said, those exclusive flash deals for any game you care about, concert you care about, theater experience, whatever. You have that Game Time guarantee, which means you'll get that assurance for the best price available for those tickets. If you find a better seat, better price for less, they'll credit you 110% of the difference there, guys. That's important. So grab your Game Time tickets today. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem the code OBR for $20 off. Download that Game Time app today or go to gametime.co to take advantage of the last minute tickets you can find at the lowest price guaranteed. All right, I know we are very different on this one team. I have the Steelers at 9. I do. I think it largely comes down with the Steelers. I know they're going to be better offensively, but I still don't believe in either quarterback. And I think they're going to still hover right around that range of 9 and 8 and fight for the 7 seed. I'm not calling for their demise. They're clearly, if they're a 9, 8 or 7, I think it's all the same here. But I think the Steelers just have some spots, especially considering like they still need some corner help. Like I know Mike Tomlin gets these guys to overachieve, and it doesn't miss me. They're probably going to draft a tackle first in the draft. They need another one, but I can't get all in with them in bed yet until is Russell Wilson going to be different than the guy that we saw last year? And if Justin Fields finds the field, is he able to process at a speed that can make him more relevant than just a run around type and create chaos? I could be way wrong on this it's November and I look back and laugh at myself, but I don't have a firm belief that they're an upper echelon AFC team right now.
I hear you. I it's not that I.
Where do you have them? Let's go over that.
I have them 6.
Okay, that's fine. I think that range is totally fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that the defense is going to be good. I think that they added a lot to the defense. I agree. They probably could use another cornerback, but there is a lot of trust here in Mike Tomlin and his ability to get these guys to play. And I just think he's got a lot more ingredients defensively past years.
The biggest wild card for them is Keanu Benton. If he becomes a second year,
that's kind of what I'm expecting.
Scary SOB, yeah. Then like you add him in with a declining Cam Hayward, who's still really good, mm-hmm. and Watt, then you're like, the defense is really dangerous.
Sneaky addition of Dean Lowry, who's like an annoying rotational guy. Has been in the NFC North forever. I watched him a lot with the Packers, and he like pops up more than you would think he should.
I still need to know what they're doing with their wide receiver group. It's Agreed. Still very much Agreed. Sitting out there. That's probably their second pick, unless they're sitting, mm-hmm. what do they pick, 15?
Yeah.
Maybe they're a little better than that. Maybe a little deeper. I can't remember. Because they made the playoffs, so they're probably more like 18, right? 18, 19? I could be wrong on that. But there's a chance there's a wide receiver they absolutely love, and maybe they feel like they can snag a tackle in the second round, and Dan Moore can be there, and they can try to develop a guy. I don't know. But the thing that I'm looking at with them, do they trust Dante Jackson seriously at corner, or do they think there's an upgrade necessary there? They clearly cannot go into this year with George Pickens and then Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins. They just cannot do that to Russell Wilson, Justin Fields.
Be pretty and funny then they have a did. Whole
they it would be very nice because that defense should be good, right? Yeah. Patrick Queen addition helps. So tackle, wide receiver, corner. Yeah. That's what they need. Yeah. And that's those are important positions to need though, right?
I think their run game is gonna be good.
It has to be better with Arthur Smith, who's one of the more creative run game minds and two fun running backs. Like there's no doubt it's going to be better. But you know, to the level of your running game can take you so far when you're leaning back into big moments with these quarterbacks, and can they figure absolutely. It out?
Their ceiling is capped. There's no confusion on, I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl contender or anything like that. They've got a concrete ceiling on them, but I just think they're going to be annoying. I think this is going to be a very annoying Steelers season.
Okay, so you have who do you have at 9 then? Because I have the Steelers.
I have the Dolphins.
Okay, so you're lower on the Dolphins. I have them at 7. Okay, yeah. So let's just do this because this kind of gets jumbled. So let's go read 9 through 6 for me.
All right, so I've got Miami, the Jets, the Bengals, and then the Steelers.
Okay, so I go Steelers at 9, Chargers at 8, Miami at 7, Ravens at 6. So we probably differ pretty significantly on the Ravens. I think Miami, for me, I have them at 7, you have them at 9, kind of the same range. They're at a crossroads. Like, do they really believe in Tua to get this thing done? There is the off-field stuff lingering, which could bring a suspension for Tyreek Hill. I don't know where that all sits. Jonnu Smith is a better tight end option for them. They bring back Raheem Mostert. They obviously still have Devon Achane. But they're defensively, they're worse. You know, you lose Christian Wilkins, like you're definitely worse. I don't love their group because Jalen Phillips is not going to be out there early. He was an Achilles guy too, right? He's not going to see the field to like maybe midseason. It's a 12-month injury, and especially for a defensive lineman pushing off all the time. Bradley Chubb, also a late season injury for them. So like Shaq Barrett's going to play there, and like, I don't even know who's going to take Jalen Phillips' role. But then you're talking about corners like Kendall Fuller. They have the division veteran Jordan Poyer. There's still talent, Javon Holland and Jalen Ramsey. I see the questions. I think I still think they're going to be explosive enough on offense to be relevant. So I think that's why I still have them at 7. And then you have the Bengals. So the big difference is you have the where do you have the Ravens?
I have the Ravens at 3.
Whew. I have the Ravens at 6. You have the Ravens at 3. I have the Bengals at 4, and you have the Bengals where?
At 7.
7. So those are some pretty big differences. So tell me why you still love the Ravens.
Oh, love and the Ravens are not.
I know, too, but in this scenario, exercise.
Well, it's Lamar Jackson. It's just Lamar Jackson and trusting that Flowers' second year gets better. They probably find another right wide receiver that contributes in the draft. So, you know, there are some offensive line questions, but I like the addition of Josh Jones. I also think we know Baltimore well enough to know that they're not done, right? So they're just going to be bargain shopping for the rest of the summer to keep adding veterans to this roster. And then on defense, it's just basically the belief that the system is going to stay, even if the guy that ran it is gone. So, you know, you still got Roquan Smith. He's going to help in terms of keeping things going. They were able to retain Madubuike. So You've got veterans at every level that know how to do this thing. So it's very much like the Steelers. It's this conversation we have once a month where it's incredibly annoying that these teams are both in the Browns division because they've built a machine that outlasts any one player or coach. And so I just expect they're still going to be very, very good on defense. And then I think Lamar Jackson on offense, you're just always in that conversation. I think you probably get Keaton Mitchell back at some point. I think he's going to be a contributor for them. Obviously, the Derrick Henry thing is whatever, but like Mark Andrews gets back healthy. There's enough there on offense for them to be a top 10 unit. And I think they were really, really good last year. They just ran into you know, Patrick Mahomes is all it comes down to.
I liked them a lot more last year. I think I'm worried where you would draw some concern for them, and again, you made very fair points, is replacing three offensive linemen, a challenge. Andrews will be fine. Likely is clearly proven he can play too. How good is this version of Derrick Henry? It's better than starting the year with Justice Hill and maybe a draft pick. So that's fine. The offense should be okay, right? Like Rashad Bateman playing more and Nelson Aguilar playing more. I mean, they've proven with Monken last year that they can find some solutions there. I think they're fine. The question for me is a little bit of the defense. I mean, Patrick Queen was pretty good. I liked Trenton Simpson in last year's draft. They took him in the third. So annoying they do that stuff so well. But he didn't do anything his rookie year. He was a non-factor. They have these guys who are their pass rush staples. Odafe Owe and David Ojabo. These are guys that they have brought in various drafts. And they've done really nothing to speak of that is significant. I mean, I think the Clowney loss is not nothing. The version of Clowney that they received, which was highly annoying.
I totally agree.
And I do have like the Brandon Stevens, our Darius Washington, and Marlon Humphrey's kind of regressed a little bit. So while on paper, I think my version is this. I have them at six. I still think they're clearly good enough to, if they, it all comes together, be a top three team again. But I feel like it's just glossing. For me, it's glossing over a lot of losses and some assumption that they're just going to be as good again. And I think I like the four rosters in front of them. I have five in front of them more. And, you know, that's where I'm at. But again, I feel like I'm out on, not as high on the Ravens as I need to be. I've been out on the Steelers for too long, like just like way out thinking they're going to miss and things are going to go under, but they continue to sort of reinvent themselves. So I have the Bengals at four. You have them at seven. Let's talk a little bit about why you think they're at seven. Is it still a secondary concern for you?
Yeah, I would say just a defense across the board concern. You know, switching DJ Reader for Sheldon Rankins is a downgrade to me. I get that they bring back Von Bell and Geno Stone comes over, so you've got veteran safeties there. But I think the questions are as much at corner. I think Taylor Britt's been okay. I don't think DJ Turner has been like a world beater. So cumulatively, I think you're going to be in much the same position that you were last year defensively. Right. And I just don't, it's as far as difference makers, I guess let's put it that way. As far as difference makers on the defense, you're talking about Trey Hendrickson and that's kind of it, right? Like
Logan Wilson can play, but they're kind of flatline. Like they got a bunch of guys,
right?
The Mike Hiltons of the world, mm-hmm. who we love,
mm-hmm.
who they, if they get DJ Turner to turn into that, I do like Geno Stone for them. Von Bell coming back is not bad. And they mix him in with Jordan Battle. They need some people to become real dudes in that group. Like a couple more. I think it's a fine defense. For me, it's the offense. Like I love the Mike Gesicki acquisition. I think that's going to be great for Joe Burrow. I think there's a year waiting where T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase are just like the best versions of themselves and healthy. And Burrow's really back from whatever the hell happened last year and is healthy and playing. And I like Zach Moss a lot for how they organize their offense. So, I mean, for me, the scary thing is they were really healthy up front last year, one of the healthiest offensive lines in the NFL. And they bring in injury riddled Trent Brown and
right.
You know, you can't bank on that year over year. So I see that concern. I'm banking on Jake's reasoning for the Bengals at four. Burrow back to being Burrow. The two wide receivers being who they are. T. Higgins fighting for a big contract from somebody. And then like little improvements around the offense. Zach Moss, et cetera, Mike Gesicki. And then the defense, just like Lou Anarumo getting them on track. And some of these guys just being a little bit better. I just look at that group and think that the roster looks better, but I could be underestimating the Ravens, even though they have really just subtracted in free agency. Haven't really added anybody, but where do you have the Browns? That's the question.
Well, I just on the Bengals quick, I just want to go back to two things. One is I said earlier with the Titans, I'm kind of one of the, it's some, you know, with this projection stuff, you have to kind of just buy things sometimes. And so one right. of the things that I'm buying is that Brian Callahan leaving matters for the right. Bengals. So from the offensive standpoint, that's part of what I'm kind of baking into this whole thing is that the offense is going to be a little listless at times.
Okay.
And I also So the second thing is, I think they trade T. Higgins before the draft. I think that is like a draft day or draft night or whatever. I think it happens because I just think they're smart enough to understand they're not going to re-sign him. He has asked for a trade. If they can get a second round pick for a player they originally drafted with a second round pick, I think you and I would dislike it because of how much we esteem the player, but I could understand it from a franchise that I think knows he's not going to be around long term.
I can't disagree. I mean, I think it'd be smart for them to try to get some, and in this wide receiver class, like
exactly
getting some return for T would be smart if they genuinely have no desire to keep him just by virtue of we can't afford all these guys. I'm with it. A little bit of projection there. I dig it. I had the Browns at 5. Where'd you have them?
I also had them at 5.
That's weird. Ironic.
Yeah.
I like it. So I had the Browns just in front of the Ravens, but behind the Bengals. We don't need to go into the Browns. We know who they are, what they've done. I think it's pretty fitting for them to be at 5 with the upside downside of what they have. Roster's pretty good.
It's where they finished last year in the conference too, right? They were the fifth team, the best wild card.
Yeah.
I like the roster too. I think I mean, this is not news to anybody. The entire thing circles around the quarterback, right?
It does. It does. I mean, and what I'm saying about the Bengals and Joe getting back on path is a similar thing too, right? Just we've seen Joe be a little better more recently. So, let's do 3, 2, and 1. I mean, I thought maybe I was being a bit ambitious with the Texans at 3. Do you have them at 3 or do you have them at 2? I could see a case for putting the Texans at 2.
I have the Texans at 2.
Yeah, I think you could put them in front of the Bills based on what they've done this path.
I have the Bills at 4 and Houston at 2. Yep.
Okay. So who's your 3? Is it Ravens?
Ravens.
Did we say that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the Bills, they added Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir. Are they going to draft a guy at wide receiver? I'd be considering it because Stephon Diggs isn't getting any younger. So they need to look at another player there. I mean, otherwise they're fine, right? Most of the offensive line is back and in good shape. Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox are back. James Cook had a really nice year last year. Defensively, again, most of the group is back. I think they could probably not because Benford took a lot of good steps last year. That's a 6th-round pick for them. That's a hell of a hit, especially considered they missed on Kyer Elam, their 1st-round pick in 22. So to have your 6th-round guy turn into a guy from that draft where your 1st-round guy hasn't been much of anything. But, yeah, the Rasul Douglas trade was big for them. It's a lot of the same Bills team. So what we're saying here is that you're saying I've got the Bills at 2, you have them at 3, is that you really love what the Texans have done, which I do too.
I mean, the Bills at 4.
Bills at 4.
I'm only jumping in to say that just because I'm down on the Bills overall, and I think the Bills, Browns, Steelers, Bengals is like a tier. I see those 4 teams pretty similarly in terms of, and obviously I love what the Bills have on offense because of Josh Allen, but like, defensively, for them to stand pat and get a year older with all of those guys and then lose the safeties. We saw what losing safeties did to the Bengals last year. I think a similar thing happens with the Bills defense where they are near a cliff.
Yeah, they're in a bit of a tricky cap spot. So, I mean, I think there was probably a desire to get some guys. They just couldn't quite pony up what they wanted to do. I mean, I'm not well-versed in what the Bills
did.
They were rumored in a lot of guys.
Yeah, they were on the outside looking in a few times, I'm sure.
So the Texans are like largely the same weapons. They re-signed Dalton Schultz, which I love that for them. Noah Brown, Tank Dell, Nico Collins. They could draft a guy. Maybe John Metchie takes a step forward. I think there's a chance. The offensive line returns largely intact. You know, C.J. Stroud just continued to get better, better, and better. They add Joe Mixon. So you remove Singletary for Mixon. I think that's an upgrade. I think Mixon's a better player. I don't know if I would have extended Joe Mixon, but that was the one questionable choice. But the defense just got better in every way. I mean, Danielle Hunter, Fadakasi up front, Danico Autry, even like Mario Edwards and Tim Settle depth pieces. This is one team that has done so well with free agency. Aziz Alshayer, at linebacker alongside Christian Harris. And you saw some good steps from like Jalen Petrie and then Singletary. They add Jeff Okuda on a nice contract. Again, CJ Henderson, you take a swing there. I just really like what they've done. And I think the only other thing outside of the Mixon extension is like what they do with the draft. They seem to have made a very interesting decision to move out of the first. In a year where like you want to continue to add weapons for your young quarterback and in your early process, take advantage of cheap contracts and fifth-year options, moving out of the first round is interesting choice by Nick Caserio, to say the least. So I don't know. I don't love that, but I think the roster, the OC coming back is very important for them. Another year with Matt Burke, D'Amico Ryan's leading that defense, and I think they're just better. And it's like hard to point against that arrow going in the upward direction. And, you know, can't always count on these things. It doesn't always work in a linear fashion, but I don't want any part of CJ Stroud and the Texans next year. Like, I have no desire to see them. And it's not because of that playoff game. It's just because, like, their talent is...
They're just very good.
Good.
Yep. Good offensive line. Good skill position players. I think Joe Mixon is underrated. Like, the Bengals trade him, and they replace him with Zach Moss. I think he's a good player. I just think he's a little underrated. So, and then the defensive stuff is what this is all about to me, because if we think D'Amico Ryans is a really good defensive mind, and I think we both think that, Jake, the adding Fadakasi, Autry, and Danielle Hunter, and you mentioned Mario Edwards and Tim Settle, adding five players that can play in the NFL to a defensive line that already had Will Anderson. You've got Derek Barnett in there. They're too deep across the board on their defensive line. And then in the secondary, they just took swings on a bunch of guys that can at least move really well, right? Okuda's a hell of an athlete. CJ Henderson, same thing. Miles Bryant. So they're just going to try and like find one of those guys to hit for cheap. But I think this could be a top 10 defense. I think this could be a really good defense. And if you pair that with improvement from CJ Stroud, and as you mentioned, continued depth in that offense with Bobby Slowick, it's a top 10 team. It's a top 10 team. And I think the upside is high enough with all of these young players that you start to believe that they could just have one of those seasons. And they play in the AFC South. We don't like any of the other three teams to be top eight team in top half of the AFC teams. Right. So they get six games against the Colts, the Jaguars, and the Titans.
Right.
They go 6-0 in their division. And what, I'm doing this on the fly, like, you know, like 8-3 outside of it, they're a 14-3 football team, probably have the one seed. Like, it's not a crazy thing to say that they could be a really, really, really good team.
Logic would say that's the next step. If you think CJ Stroud is to be as special as we think he is, you know, the young quarterbacks year two take those serious steps. Like, that's where Mahomes did. These guys play in meaningful football games, and CJ did that as a rookie, and you would project that his team should get better. I just think they could have added another wide receiver to that mix, even though they brought back Robert Woods and John Ritchie. I would just be swinging more at those guys. But anyway, man, good group. I mean, I have the Chiefs at one. I don't think we're going to disagree on that.
No.
You know, where it's like...
One more year.
Yeah, one more year. It's almost like in the middle of the Patriots run, right? We could probably love some rosters more, but are we wasting time? Like, this is who they are. They're going to always be at the top of this thing. And the thing that irks me, Andrew, is that the thing that was sitting out there is like, can they go out on the road and do it? They've never really done that. And they did.
Pretty easily, actually.
Pretty easily. They add Marquise Brown, which helps because the Rashee Rice situation at minimum is a suspension. And yeah, then it's like behind that, it's pretty murky. Like, Sky Moore hasn't developed. Kadarius Toney, I could see being off the roster soon. They don't have much. They'd be served well to go get it's not the worst thing in the world for them to maybe go get Odell Beckham on a cheap one-year deal and then draft. They have to. I think it's a pinned-in situation at 32. They have got to invest in a wide receiver again.
But there's the also line a question is, about left tackle.
Yeah, Wanya Morris is kind of slated to be that guy. That's interesting. We'll see if that is what holds to be true, but I mean, outside of that, most of the group is back. Defensively, most of the same guys are there. Tranquil Bolton, Leo Chenal, and then they do lose Jarius Sneed, so we'll see how they go about it. And they've had great success. Jalen Watson's a seventh-round pick. They've had success getting some of these guys all over the board in the draft, which makes it, you know, all the more frustrating. But no matter where this roster sort of sits for me, it's like, do they have Mahomes? They still have Kelsey. They'll probably figure it out. Yeah, with the three of those guys figured out. Fourth is Chris Jones. He's the fourth guy.
And then Steve Spagnuolo. It's a bunch of guys, but they seem to keep all the important ones.
They do. So that's probably the five. Spags, Mahomes, Kelsey, Reed, and then Chris Jones. And that's their real dudes, and then they surround them with end-of-the-first-round draft picks and hitting on some late picks. And you know, like George Karloftis has become a nice pick for them at the end of the first round. there have been some of these guys that they have figured out ways to get. So they're good. They'll continue to be good. They have another draft of picks to supplement and, you know, replace needs somehow and maybe get a tackle, but definitely got to chase a wide receiver. I don't think they're done at wide receiver even outside the draft, but I mean, you know, until one of those five is maybe even two of those five guys are gone that we mentioned in their core, they're at the top of the list. It sucks.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny about it, Jake, is that last year we did this all off season. It was like, well, it's definitely the Chiefs at one. And then the season plays out and they're proving they're mortal all over the place, losing games they shouldn't lose, consistently struggling to score on offense, looking totally vulnerable. And you're like, this is the year, as you mentioned, they're the three seed. They've got to go on the road to do it. They do, and it doesn't seem to be that big of a deal for them. So there's also the dimension of this where I don't think that they're going to have the best record in the AFC. Like, if we're just talking about their performance over 17 games, what's really annoying is that they've proven that they don't even need to be the best team in the AFC to be on top when the season's over or when the playoffs are over. So they could be a 10-7 team that wins their division and is the third or fourth seed and still, I mean, it's what they just did. So that to me is the most frustrating part of this entire thing is that they don't need to be good from September. They need to be good from like mid-November, maybe December.
Yeah, them doing the thing they had failed to do was really disheartening. And you make a good point there about them feeling mortal throughout the year. This is a team you can beat.
I was so foolish for having them first. I should have seen that they had all these holes, they had all these weaknesses, and they're showing up. I should have predicted it, and it doesn't matter. So this putting them one is less about the overall roster and more of an acknowledgement that you have to kill them twice. You can't just kill them in the regular season. You have to do that, and then somebody's got to do it in the playoffs, and that's what has seemed almost impossible.
They have this just intimidating nature about them that the Bengals have a couple times figured out, but they still, in the year, every year that goes, every year another one, they just get this aura about them. Even when they have holes at like wide receiver, oh, they're just going to plug in. You know, they're gonna trade for somebody midseason. They're gonna bring back, you know, someone who catches a touchdown for them to win the Super Bowl, like just, you know, Mecole Hardman types, and pulling it off with like Marcus Valdes-Scantling. Like, they just figure out a way. They did it with, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster. And this is what your quarterback does. If he's good enough, they carry you across the finish line with some of these guys.
I think the Patriots dynasty is absolutely the aiming point because it's the head coach and the quarterback in lockstep.
Yeah.
And that's just so rare in the NFL to have both of those figured out. You can find one of them, to find both of them long term and where they don't seem like either of them really wants to go anywhere or do anything different than just continue to stepping on people's throats. That's when it starts to get dispiriting. And it's like, you just have to get used to this being the way that the NFL is.
Right. So we'll keep talking about the Chiefs at one, but the Browns are at five, striking distance if the quarterback plays well to being a top three team. I mean, the Browns can play with any of those teams. Roster's good enough. Real quick, I have one Chiefs, two Bills, three Texans, four Bengals, five Browns, six Ravens, seven Dolphins, eight Chargers, nine Steelers, 10 Jets, 11 Colts, 12 Jags, 13 Raiders, 14 Titans. There you go. 15 Denver, 16 Patriots. Andrew, rattle yours off real quick for the final count.
Right, so I've got the Chiefs at one, Texans at two, Ravens at three, Bills at four, Browns at five, Steelers at six, Bengals at seven, New York Jets at eight, Miami Dolphins at nine, Colts at 10, Jaguars at 11, Chargers 12, Titans 13, Broncos 14, Raiders 15, Patriots 16.
I like it. We see a lot of these pretty similarly. There are some tiers here that we can maybe get into closer to the season where we see some of these teams, but you can sort of segment them off collectively there to see where we're at. And any team inside like the top 10,
yeah,
we view as even the top 11.
That's how I see
teams that you can get into the playoffs. So,
but I will say, I think this year's version of the AFC is a little bit less top heavy than what we saw last year, because I think you take the Bills down a peg.
Right.
And I think you say that the Ravens lost enough on defense and just in general, like they just had a real exodus of talent, offensive line, defense, that I think they are now in that second tier. To me, I see it as a clear single tier of the Chiefs and the Texans. And so from a Brown-centric perspective, the goal has got to be to bust into that group. right? And the way that you do that is by winning your division, winning 12, 13 games, winning your division, getting a home game in the playoffs or
have
two.
Have to.
And then figuring out a way to go on the road and beat one of those teams. But that's the opportunity that I don't think was as available last year, because I think this time last year we would have said that the Chiefs, Ravens, Bills, you know, and to a certain extent the Dolphins were kind of edging into that category, the Bengals were edging into that category. Those teams were feeling sort of invulnerable, and I think there's a lot more vulnerable teams at the top now, so that it becomes easier to get into that group, and that's the task ahead of Cleveland this year.
One that they can achieve, man, so we're pumped about that. If they can get a home playoff game, I think that will really just change their general vibe and how they're going after this. I mean, again, home playoff game has to be the first step. Win the division, get your home playoff game.
Yeah.
Go from there.
Right. I think that's when you do this exercise this way, the thing that becomes clear is how non-negotiable it is for them to win the division. You know, down the stretch of last year, because of the injuries, the conversation became, we'll just figure out a way to get into the playoffs. That's all that really matters. Nobody was really concerned about catching the Ravens. I think the Browns need to start the year strong so that they're not in a position late in the year where they need the Ravens to drop four games, because that's not how Baltimore finishes, right? So, or, you know, the Bengals for that matter. So it becomes, I think, paramount for them to figure out a way to get into that next tier of 12 to 14 wins.
Well said. Well said. You can't be banking on these teams, top teams in this division. You got to put yourself in a position where you're the team that teams are hunting down and hoping, fingers crossed, that you can't win some of those late games. We'll do this after the draft. I think it's a fun exercise to look at where these teams are. We've really identified several of the holes that each team has to fill too. So we'll just revisit this exercise, talk about how well they did closing the gaps with the draft, and we'll keep you updated on where we think the Browns are. We both have them fifth. That ironically worked out pretty well for where we think they are. So, all right, guys, thanks for hanging out today. We will do maybe look at the NFC at some point. I don't know. It's not always as fun. Not always as connected to that side, but we'll consider it. But more draft content to come, plenty to get you prepared, and then you know, we'll keep you updated every day what's going on in Berea and around the team. And you know, as we saw today, they're not done adding and changing this roster. So we'll keep you updated on everything. Thanks for hanging out, making this a part of your day. Rate and review the podcast if you can. Always appreciate that, guys. So many of those are so well written, and we're thankful that you take the time to do that. Just an addition of whatever you think the podcast is worth is a star rating is really helpful too. So thanks for doing that, guys. For Andrew and myself, we appreciate you being here, hanging out with us. Have a great day. Go Browns.